T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Well, welcome, welcome, welcome. I love being here with you every Sunday. In fact, I always say it's nothing more fun than sitting here gabbing with you on a Sunday. Seriously, you guys, I just have a great time with you. And thank you for joining us. And just know that if you have a voice and you want to use it, this is the place for you here at CCO. Well, Susie Jones, how you doing?
I am great. I'm great. I've been running around a little bit today.
I love that. That's what you guys do in the newsroom, and you do it well. You run around to get the news for all of us, and we thank you for that. And I know you're probably blushing right now. But I do want to say to you, you had a chance to go over to Starkey and participate a little bit tonight, right?
I did.
Kind of get the scoop on the source. Who were the celebrities that came this year?
Well, Geraldine, there were 3 top ones. None of which talked to the media, which irritated me beyond belief.
None?
One of which I thought I was in love with, but now I hate. Ben Affleck.
What?
Walked by me and said, hi, 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 and did not do one media interview. And I was like, oh, I wanted to have a romance with him. I was going to give him my number. But he just didn't even.
Just kept on stepping. Who are the other two?
Caitlyn Jenner.
Oh, wow.
Who I shook her hand.
Yeah.
But she didn't want to talk. But I just said, I just want to say hello. She said, hello. Off she went.
Yeah.
And Steven Tyler.
Steven Tyler.
The Rocks.
Oh, guy. Oh, from the group that I adore, Aerosmith?
Yes.
My brother Billy had a chance to work with him. And I said to Billy, I said, when you get in that studio, you hug him for me. Just kiss him on the cheek. No, not doing any kissing, Geraldine. And he didn't speak either?
He didn't either.
So what does that tell you as a reporter? Does that tell you that Starkey or maybe the committee said, don't do that?
I don't know. Maybe, you know, I was thinking about that driving around today, coming back from that. Goldie Hawn last year or the year before spoke.
Yeah.
So they get the big names. I think it's got to be the person. I think they decide whether they're going to. I mean, because Goldie Hawn's a big name.
Goldie Hawn's a huge name.
But
yeah.
She came over to the media.
But maybe something. Do you know of any stories where something was said to someone and they thought maybe we shouldn't do that anymore?
Well, Ben Affleck's having a date with someone from Saturday Night Live, which. But I, you know, I don't think in this environment. I mean, honestly, you get about 1 minute per interview.
If you're lucky.
Yeah. You've done red carpets.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, you just boom, 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 boom. There were 66 members of the media lined up on the red carpet in St. Paul. And they just, 1, 2, 3, you know, like there were, I think we got 37 1-minute interviews. So besides those 3 who didn't talk, I had fun talking to Evander Holyfield.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I had fun talking to Too Tall Jones from the Dallas Cowboys. And he is so funny because these are my
brother-in-law will be happy to hear about that. That's
so there's Too Tall. And I'm like talking to him and about Starkey and yada, da, da, da. I said, man, I just got to tell you. He said, what? I said, I really did not like you when I was little. He said, what? I said, there were too many games we cried in our coffee watching you dumb Dallas Cowboys beat us. And then he said, I want you to know something. He said, I love the Vikings. They were a great football team. He said, I watched Carl Eller.
Yeah.
And I emulated whatever he did. And he was a positive influence in my life.
How about
so then
that?
About 15 minutes later, guess who shows up?
Carl Eller.
Carl Eller.
Well, of course. And did you tell him what he said?
I did. I said, Too Tall Jones is here. And he said he admired you and how you did your, you know, he enjoyed how well you played. Mm-hmm. So another one I've had a crush on for a long time. Secretly, Robert Smith used to be a running back.
Oh, gosh,
he
I know Robert.
Fine.
In fact, my sister and her husband knew him well.
He's
and,
fine.
You know, Dr. Robert Smith,
Dr.
we should
Robert
say.
Smith.
Absolutely.
Right.
And he is just a remarkable
charming.
Young man.
Just
yeah, very charming,
charming
good looking.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful.
Yeah.
So he was quite eloquent and spoke to me at length. Mm-hmm. Frankie Muniz, the little short guy who used to on Cody Banks.
Mm-hmm.
Mini-Me was there. That
oh, Mini-Me.
Dude.
Yeah, yeah.
Yep. Kevin, I'm not going to remember his last name. I'm going to get it from Hercules. He's from Mound, Minnesota.
Oh, come on. You know this, Kevin. Kevin
come on,
knows this.
Kevin.
Sorbo.
There
yes,
you go.
Thank
he's
you.
From Minnesota. Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
He's from Mound.
Kevin Sorbo.
Brought all of his kids.
And by the way, Mini-Me is Vern Troyer.
Thank you. Very
thank
good.
You.
Also the actor who played Michael Orr in The Blind Side. Arnold was there. And I mixed him up. I was like, how's your mom? And he's looking at me like, I just played the actor that I'm not Michael Orr. And I'm like, ah. Yeah. Okay.
You know, so many people make those mistakes. We watch it during the award ceremonies, and you've got these people asking really dumb questions. I mean, reporters that really
should
can
know,
ask
right.
and have really asked some great questions before, but maybe trying to be coy or, you know, whatever. Yeah. And they just kind of failed miserably in that 1 minute. And then you forgive them and you keep going. Because we all know, you know, either you are listening, watching, or you're actually the one asking the questions. And it can be really tough sometimes. And sometimes somebody will whisper in your ear very quickly, don't ask them about that. Da, 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 da. And then you have to come up with something very quickly to
right.
say, oh, by the way.
Yeah, exactly. I will say there were some very heartwarming stories. So you get all the movie stars, whatever, and I'll do a story for tomorrow and have some of that. But I am going to probably talk about one young man, and I can't Derek Coleman was a football player for the Seattle Seahawks, and he was the first ever deaf NFL football player.
Oh, wow.
And he was very eloquent, and his father was with him, and they talked about growing up and how his hearing aids would pop out when he got hit. So his mom put a nylon over his head to keep his hearing aids on when he played.
Did he know what he was wearing?
Yeah. But, you know, there are those heartwarming stories that of people that have done great things. Evander Holyfield said, you know, I feel like I'm where I am today because someone helped me.
That's right.
And I was poor. And someone helped me. And so whatever I can do to help poor children in this world who can't hear, that's what I want to do.
Yeah, those that can actually say no one helped me are very small and few in numbers. I don't even know if they exist at all, but I'm sure that someone is probably walking around going, nobody helped me. Mm. And look at me, I'm just fine. But all of us, I believe, have been helped in some way by another.
Yeah.
That's kind of the cycle of life. That's what we're supposed to do. So I'm really glad that you got a chance to hear their stories.
And on that note, just sort of the whole circle of life and giving back and tenderness, a huge outpouring tonight. I was just in Southwest Minneapolis, 51st and Washburn.
Right.
Very affluent neighborhood.
Right.
A woman last night was shot and killed by Minneapolis police. They were there responding to a call of what they called an unknown trouble. That's how they classify it today.
What does that mean?
I don't know. Mayor Hodges spoke to the media today and called it an unknown trouble. But anyway, so these two officers go there about midnight and shots were fired. That woman is dead. Mm. She's 40-something. They haven't officially released her name, but her first name is Justine. Interestingly, my daughter Josephine said her son went to St. Louis Park High School and posted on Facebook a video kind of saying they're not getting any information from authorities about what happened to their mom. But she was a healer. She worked at the Lake Harriet Spiritual Center. So there were lots of people there crying, talking about what a wonderful woman this she was. And it was just an interesting evening, Geraldine, because there were also Nakima Livy Pounds was there. Jacob Latta was there. So a lot of the same people that were at the Philando Castile and the Jamar Clark protest came here and said, we just want you to know we're with you. And that this, they felt, but you know, it's so early. You really don't ever know. And you have to be a little mindful of what were the circumstances. We really don't know.
And again,
know.
It was called unknown
trouble.
Unknown trouble. That just sounds so bizarre to me.
Very vague.
I'm sure you probably heard about the woman who took off all her clothes and walked naked through the Atlanta airport recently.
Okay.
And this woman, you know, just was using such vile language. And she walked up and down the corridor. And they couldn't do anything about it until a police officer came. Mm. But they needed a female. That was the rule.
Okay.
A female officer had to come. And you hear about people who are derelicts or people who are mentally ill that, you know, really having challenges today. And, we've heard about police officers shooting a mental ill person or a person that, you know, their assistant was with them. And remember that guy that was shot and on the ground and his assistant was sitting there. His assistant was shot. I'm sorry. And the mentally ill man was saying, this is my friend or something like that. Do you remember that?
Yeah. And the gentleman who led the police on a high-speed chase up in Blaine or north of Blaine, or I forget what city it was, Harris, Minnesota.
Yeah.
You know, he was suicidal, and they do say sometimes that people who are mentally ill die suicide by officer that they don't do it, but if they are reckless and have a gun and are flailing about in front of police. But we don't know what happened in this case.
We don't
know,
but we will find out this week. I know you'll be on top of the story, and we'll be, you know, keep listening to here to WCCO to get your updates on this story, and I'll be praying for the family. Every time I see an ambulance, I pray for the family.
Amen.
Because you just never know what they're going through.
No.
I adore you.
Love you, too.
All right. We have a guest coming up, our first guest, and I'm really excited to talk to her. Her name is Annette Meeks, and she is a longtime GOP activist. What exactly is a GOP activist? We'll be back. It is now 7:22 here at WCCO. Welcome back. You are listening to Steele Talking, and I'm your host, Geraldine Steele. My first guest tonight is Annette Meeks. Early this week, we heard from MSNBC host Joe Scarborough that he was leaving the GOP party. Now, this is really important because this was a serious voice for the GOP. He and Mika Brzezinski, she was supposed to be the Democrat on the show. He was the staunch, dedicated Republican on the show, although he would often go against various things he disagreed with the president. This was the guy that really didn't have any problem saying, I am a Republican. And now he has announced that he is going to become an independent. How important is this? Annette Meeks is joining us. She's a longtime GOP activist and the founder of the Freedom Foundation. Welcome to CCO, Annette.
Hey, how are you?
Hey, now I'm doing well. So why does this matter?
Well, you know, I think it doesn't. I worked with Joe Scarborough when he was a congressman. And, you know, I hate that term nothing burger, but he kind of is a nothing burger in terms of influencing other people and what's happening with party realignment. This kind of stuff just happens. And it's really more of a way of the person who makes the announcement. George Will did this during the presidential campaign, said if Donald Trump became the standard bearer for the Republican Party, he would no longer be a Republican, and he registered as an independent too. I mean, this kind of stuff.
But George Wills does not have the same power that Joe Scarborough does. I mean, people, millions and millions of Americans are in their homes or in their cars or at work listening or watching Joe Scarborough and the Morning Joe show on MSNBC. It's a huge rating show.
Well, I would advise those people to seek their news elsewhere. Again, it's just, It's for those of us here in Flyover County, I don't think it's much of anything. He's not an influential voice. He's not somebody who's been around that people look at and say, wow, there's a standard bearer for the Republican Party. To the best of my knowledge, he hasn't even been a speaker or in any prominence in the last couple of Republican conventions. But more importantly, I mean, this kind of stuff just happens when President Barack Obama took office, the same thing happened. There were a bunch of Southern Democrats that did not believe he stood for what they stood for. They were much more conservative Democrats. They switched to the Republican Party. I mean, it's just part of the gamesmanship. I don't think it matters much at all.
It doesn't matter much at all? I mean, we all know that the media is very powerful. You know this. You have had your hand in that. You've been a spokesperson. You were part of the early discussions about, what was that called? The Contract for America, I think. Mm-hmm. So you know how important it is to have mouthpieces that go out front and really speak in front of the party, whether it's Mitch McConnell for the GOP party or whether it's, you know, anyone on the Democratic side, Elizabeth Warren and so many others. It matters when people start talking, particularly if they have the power of the people's ear. And Joe Scarborough is one of those. I have never agreed with him. I am a liberal and I have no problem saying that. My challenge is, as I watch, you know, the two of them, one being Democrat and one being Republican, you know, I was always frustrated because sometimes it was never quite clear where Mika stood, but it was always clear where Joe stood. And now that voice, and I don't think that voice is completely gone. I think just because they go over to the Independence Party, become an independent, it doesn't mean to me that they'll just stop saying that, you know, I believe in a smaller government. I believe in some of the, you know, vestiges of the GOP. So I think he's still kind of a mouthpiece, but you don't think it's important at all?
Well, let me put it to you this way. I talk to hundreds of Republicans and conservatives every week. Not one person has said, boy, I'm really upset. Joe Scarborough switched parties this week. People are more concerned about some of the big issues that are happening in our country. And I think if Joe Scarborough really wanted to make a stand, that probably would have been much more, I guess, influential than just I'm switching my party because I got into a personal feud with the president of the United States and I no longer want to be affiliated with him. I think that people are more concerned. It's one of the reasons why Donald Trump was elected in the first place. I was up north over the 4th of July in one of those counties where they had a Democrat state senator. They had a Democrat state rep. They were a solid Democrat county. And this last election went 70% almost for Donald Trump.
I understand that. But at the same time, you and I both know when it came to the 6th district in Georgia, that congressional district, they spoke. Yes, the Republican won, but it was not an easy fight. And this was a district that people thought for sure was going to stay Republican. It did, but he had to seriously fight for that, or she had to really fight for that. So here we are looking at the changes, right? Let's look at Joe Scarborough walking away and others walking away from the Republican Party. And then you have two races that just happened this year, both still Republican, but they really had to fight to be. That paints a picture that there's a change that's happening in the wind.
Well, there were four, actually. There was one in Kansas, there was one in Montana, mm-hmm. one in South Carolina, and one in Georgia. Republicans swept the field. So I guess if I look at that and say, what are the lessons to be learned? Let's face it, Donald Trump is a very, very divisive president. This is a man who, you know, has said from the get-go, heck, I'm one of those people that said he'll never be elected because he is not what we expect from our chief executive officer, if you will, of the United States. We've never had a president who was not previously elected to any office or a military commander and just came straight out of private sector. So in that sense, he's very different. He plays by different games.
Now, that's a new term for him. He's very different. Come on, Annette. He's so much more than different. And by the way, with the success of Bernie Sanders in our last election, I suspect other parties, i.e. Independent, Federalist, Green Party, and more, are poised to gain more voters. Don't you see that on the horizon?
No, what I see is a lot of people in the mushy middle looking around saying, why doesn't somebody fix what's wrong with, and then fill in the blank.
Yeah, but we've been trying to fix those same things for how many years now?
Well,
it's the same thing over and over again, taxes, education, you know, you name it. And here we are once again faced with some of those same issues. And we're looking at a president who has never, like you said, he's never been in this arena before. And we are damaged to be happening. Does not make us better, Annette. You would agree with that, right?
We're 175 days into this administration. It's less than one-tenth of the Trump administration. He's got a long ways to go. And I tell all my partisan liberal friends, you better pace yourself because you might strongly disagree with him, but the election is still 18 months off, the next election, the midterms. And you can't beat somebody with nobody. And we need to see from the Democratic Party, what is their opposition other than I'm not Donald Trump.
Right. And you remember Barack Obama, Senator Barack Obama came out of nowhere. Everyone was saying the same thing. You guys don't have anything but Hillary. That's all you have. And then all of a sudden he was introduced to the world. So, you know, I remember the first time I saw him at the 2004, I believe it was, Democratic National Convention. And I was blown away. I did not forget who he was. And I kept saying,
is that right?
Who are you? I literally stood up and said, who are you? And so sometimes we don't have to see it. Like you said, we've got almost 4 years to go with this president. But just because we don't see someone right now doesn't mean someone is going to arrive that needs to step forward.
Somebody will. That's part of our great Democratic tradition. Somebody always does come and becomes a loyal opposition. What I guess I think I see is the National Democratic Party with Congressman Ellison and his name just slipped right out of my head.
Yeah, mine too. Mine too. I know who you're talking about. Mm-hmm.
But anyway, they keep going around criticizing Donald Trump. And again, this is what I heard up in Walker over the 4th. Over and over again, people said, you know, I don't agree with him, but at least he's trying to fix the problem.
But would you agree that President Donald Trump is the head of the Republican Party? Would you agree with that?
Oh, I think most people just assume that, yes.
Okay,
yes,
would you agree with that?
Do I think he stands for everything Republican Party does?
Do you think he is the leader of the Republican Party?
I think he is the de facto leader, yes. I think by being elected president of the United States with an R behind his name, that makes most people assume that he is the leader. Does he stand for everything I stand for? Heck no. But like I said, for the next 4 years, 3.5 years, he's going to be the leader of the Republican Party. And is his name Perez? Isn't that terrible? I can't think of his name. The gentleman who was just elected
head of the
party, DNC.
Mm-hmm, the DNC. Yeah. Yep. I know exactly who you're talking about. I can't remember his name either. But I do want to say, I was going to ask you initially right off the bat, what does a GOP activist do? Now I know. So I don't need to ask that question. But Annette, I really appreciate you coming on and talking with us tonight. I hope we can call on you again.
Of course. My pleasure. And have a great evening. It's a lovely one out there.
It really is. Thank you so much.
You bet. Bye-bye.
That is Annette Meeks. She's a longtime GOP activist. If you want more information about her, freedomfoundation.publishpath.com. We'll take a break. We'll be back with my next guest, David Sturek. I've never spoken to a professor from Southwest State, Minnesota, to talk about political science and what's going on right now in the news. And I can't wait to tell you about it.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
36 here at WCCO. It is beautiful outside and 83 degrees. My goodness, I hope you are enjoying it as much as I am. Even inside the building, it's just beautiful to look out and see it. There's been so much talk about the upcoming 2018 elections, right? We hear it just about every day if you're listening to the news here at WCCO. Yet in Minnesota, midterm elections just can't seem to get voters to the polls. Let's find out why with Southwest Minnesota State University political science professor David Sturek. How are you, sir?
Good evening. Thanks for having me on, Jolene.
Well, welcome to WCCO Radio, Professor David. You are also a city councilman in Marshall, correct?
That's right.
Oh, great. There's a lot you can tell us tonight. Okay. Do you teach freshmen at Southwest?
I teach them at all levels, Jolene. I teach everything from local government, including like counties and small cities and townships out here in greater Minnesota, all the way up to international relations. So I try to have my hand in a little bit of everything.
So when the freshmen first arrive in your class on the first day of class, right, how quickly are you aware of their voting interests or lack of it?
Well, I don't really ask them that. I some of that will come out as you have students who have opinions and add to the discussion in the class. And that's fine. That's a healthy thing. I encourage comments, ideas, participation. You be polite, of course, and respectful. And a lot of my students may come from families who have strong party affiliations, but don't necessarily have strongly developed ideas themselves. So that's part of my job. I tell them I'm not paid to tell you what to think. I am paid to give you some skills and some tools to help you figure out what you think about this stuff over many years. And if you 5, 10, 20 years from now, you don't remember me or the grade, but if you remember something you learned from the class that helps you understand, maybe even explain what's going on in the news to somebody else, then your time and money here has been well spent.
Mm-hmm. Well, you and I both know that it continues to be a real challenge for Minnesotans' youth, particularly the graduating classes, the high school graduating classes. When they go into college, it's hard to get them involved in a midterm to really understand the importance of midterm. Presidential, no problem. In fact, I came across an article from MemPost dated July 13th, and it says Minnesota loves to brag about turnout, but Minneapolis and St. Paul residents are actually pretty bad about voting in municipal elections. And it's so true, isn't it?
Well, it depends very much on the election. It's one of our challenges in political science to get the right apples and the right oranges together to make a meaningful comparison. The article in MemPost drew upon a couple of political science research projects which tried to compare and figure out why people do or don't turn out for municipal elections. And that's part of the problem. Many cities, including many big cities, hold their city elections the same time as elections for Congress, president, governor. So you have to isolate for standalone municipal elections that are held many cases in spring, many cases like Minneapolis and St. Paul in November of an odd year, away from the federal and the state stuff. By that measure, Minneapolis and St. Paul don't do badly. The premise of the article, I think, maybe was a bit dramatic. Seriously, well, if you look closely at the studies that the article was interested in, Minneapolis and St. Paul over recent years have had higher turnout, for example, than Los Angeles, New York, Houston, Phoenix, Baltimore, a number of other big cities that have their elections, again, standalone, away from the federal or state elections, and comparable to places like Detroit, Philadelphia, and Boston. And the only traditional big city that you think of as a traditional industrial city that's notably higher is Chicago, which still has a pretty strong party organization. So you have that dimension. Also, these are Minneapolis and St. Paul are nonpartisan elections. The DFL will hold endorsing conventions, try to come up with endorsed candidates, though they rarely do because their parties dominate so much in those two cities that it's like having everybody in the family with an opinion about what do you have for Christmas dinner. So the candidates run individually, in most cases without any kind of party identification, and that makes a difference. There are a certain number of voters who will turn out if it's a partisan election, but won't if it's nonpartisan, that you're taking away an important voting cue. Again, if you control for that, I think those two cities do pretty well.
Yeah, we've been very proud of our numbers, but I have to tell you, it's really sad. I vote in every election unless I'm out of town. And even if I'm out of town, I vote absentee. So, yes, I vote in every election. And it bothers me when I go in at 11 o'clock in the morning and I'm number 102. You know,
right.
It's disturbing. Yeah. And that's what happens in the midterms across these the Twin Cities and even more. So what part of the country, you named a lot of the big cities, but what about the southern states? Do they seem to come out more for the midterm elections in those states?
It depends on the city. Again, Jerlene, that this is the challenge of making a good comparison on a nationwide scale. That study showed, for example, Louisville, Kentucky has one of the highest urban big city turnouts, mm-hmm. whereas places like Jacksonville and Charlotte are comparable to the Twin Cities. Others, I'll even mention some of the California cities like Los Angeles, are much lower.
Right.
So it varies a lot. It depends a lot on how the ballot is set up. Is it partisan versus nonpartisan? It depends on the political culture of that particular state or sometimes a particular city. And you mentioned midterm elections, and that has a couple of meanings. One, which we're talking about mayoral elections, but the elections, for example, in November 2018,
right.
Most 34 states or 37 states elect a governor. Most of them elect state legislators and dozens of thousands of other things. By those elections, the every 2 years elections, Minnesota is usually the number one turnout state. And the elections, if you take those midterm elections for governor and then the elections for president, we've been number one, I think, all but eight out of the 11 elections since I've been a resident of this state. So that holds up pretty well. Now, Minneapolis and St. Paul are, of course, very small, not very typical subsets of a much larger state.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're zeroing in on them, well, then you've got different circumstances. One thing that impresses me, though, is certainly no sign that those two cities are becoming lackluster, indifferent, tuning out, unengaged. You look at the intensity of competition this year for the mayoral elections. Both Minneapolis and St. Paul have open seats. Incumbents, longtime incumbents, I'm mixing up two cities. St. Paul, a longtime incumbent Chris Coleman's retiring. Mm-hmm. Minneapolis, you have a first-term incumbent Betsy Hodges, who's had a challenging first term.
Absolutely.
In both cases, you have a lot of competition, four or five serious front-rank candidates of very different backgrounds and constituencies. There's a lot of energy that you can tell even from a distance in both cities. One of the things about big cities is they tend to make people more political. You live closer together with more people,
mm-hmm.
more things that have to be sorted out. Somebody has to make rules or resolve controversies, deliver services in a way that's much more intense and much more consistent than even in a smaller regional center like Marshall, 14,000. We may have pretty good turnout, but it's a much less intense political environment day to day than a big city has.
Okay, so as we look forward to 2018, what are you expecting to happen in the Twin Cities metro area and throughout Minnesota? Are you expecting the numbers to be bigger this time?
Too soon to say, Jerlaine. Too soon to say, both in terms of what happens in Minnesota elections and what happens nationally. General rule of thumb, if you compare the presidential years with the true midterm years, like 2014, 2018, for every four people who vote in a presidential election, you have about three people or slightly fewer who vote in the midterm election. Here in Minnesota, that drop-off is usually narrower, so it's maybe a 5-4 ratio. We're going to have an open governorship. Both parties have, mirroring the Minneapolis and St. Paul activity, have on the order of 6 to 7 serious candidates seeking their respective parties' selection. Mm-hmm. I think that's going to attract voter interest next year in the precinct caucuses. That's the first step of the party endorsement process for both Republicans and DFL.
Right. And I think more of the Republicans participate in those caucuses, right, than do Democrats.
It depends on the year and on the candidates. Democrats probably have a stronger, all things being equal, a stronger base in the state. They usually have a higher turnout in the caucuses.
Mm-hmm.
But the Republicans had a record high turnout in 2016. And
right.
It was interesting. Some parts of the state, it was record number of people turning out to vote for Donald Trump. In some other places, it was to vote for candidates against Donald Trump. So it was a very complicated pattern, but a lot of energy, a lot of interest, a lot of intensity. I don't think that's going away. I think we'll see our share of that in 2018.
So you don't think, you're not at all concerned that Minnesotans may sit and watch all that is happening with the Russia investigation and, you know, hearing about the possibility of collusion and interfering with our election. You don't fear that Minnesotans will say, hey, my vote doesn't count. What's the point?
I don't think so, Julie. Now, we'll see how that works in other states, but here in Minnesota, we have such an ingrained sense of what's called the moralistic political culture, the sense that the public affairs are important stuff. It's like sitting up straight, eating your vegetables. It doesn't have to be fun, but you need to do it. That's such a strong part of our way of thinking and has been for 150 years since statehood.
But you have to admit that the state is really changing. You know, you talk about the Twin Cities, which are, of course, are the two biggest cities. Right. But then you've got the outlying areas like Rochester and St. Cloud that are also big cities, right? I think number 3 and 4, respectively. Yep. And so, you know, you've got a changing demographic in both of those cities. And, of course, that, too, affects the numbers that are coming out. So let's talk a little bit about what happened. Go ahead.
Well, just a thought on that, Jolene. Ethnic groups are nothing new to Minnesota. And one of the things that we've seen from following the pattern of our state's political development is as new groups come here, they get acculturated to the rhythms and the patterns that are already here. I don't see any reason to think that will change now.
No, we have had some challenges with some of the communities, particularly the Somali community, acclimating. So that's I disagree with you on that. And also, you know, as you have these communities of color moving into these outlying areas, we need to make sure that they feel welcome. We need to make sure that they are involved and that they understand the importance of those midterm elections, too. And so I'm already thinking, how are we doing that? Do you know how we're going after those particular groups to make sure that they are involved, if they are available to vote?
I understand. Well, assuming you're eligible, age, citizenship,
right,
are the basic things. First off, we make it easier to vote in Minnesota than any other state.
Thank goodness.
Election day registration, variety of other things. And so you got that opportunity. There's some, I'll just say, some impediments that aren't there. But also, you know, the motivation of the Somali community in Minneapolis in the last two election cycles, when you had contested races won by active Somali candidates for city council, for school board,
mm-hmm,
for that state representative race involving the challenges to longtime Representative Phyllis Kahn. I mean, I think that fits a classic pattern. We've got an ethnic group that has a very strong sense of group cohesion and interest. An unfamiliarity with the process, but over time, they get familiar.
Okay.
I believe that'll happen.
Well, okay, let me end with this.
Sure.
I think we should start taking a look at how civics is being taught today. And when we look at how children are learning from what grade to what about voting and the importance of it and what it means to be a member of a party and what it means to do, you know, to get out and vote in all of the elections and how it affects our lives, their lives as children, I think that we've kind of dropped the ball somewhere. Do you agree with that?
That's probably been part of the problem, Jolene. I think any educator from grade school up to college has to think very carefully about the goal of citizenship. You know, I'll just say in terms of college, you've come here for 4 years to spend a lot of time, a lot of money, opportunity cost. What should you be thinking of challenging yourself to get out of this experience, hopefully a path to an interesting, rewarding job, but also to have a keener awareness of the world around you, be it in your neighborhood, your host city, state, and so on. And that means not being quite so cynical. Politics can be a big turnoff. I ask students, why do people your age tend to shy away from politics? And I get a variety of answers, usually including it's loud, it's obnoxious, it's nasty, it's too complicated, it's too boring. How can it be both too loud and too boring? I'm not quite sure, but depending on the student. And I just don't understand much about it. Well, okay, that's what we have the challenge facing us as educators, is to give you the confidence, the efficacy. That's a word we use, meaning a belief that your actions make a difference. The two biggest predictors of voter turnout are age and education. And over time, we all get older. I've got a big birthday coming up tomorrow, so I'm thinking about that. Plus, over time, we're bound to get more educated. And over time, those are great remedies, great reinforcers, or great builders of citizenship. So I'm very optimistic in the long term that'll happen.
I sure appreciate you joining us tonight, sir. Really, it's an eye-opener, and I can just imagine what this school year, this coming school year, will be like for you, considering we have President Trump in office and all of the scandal that is going on right now. You will be a very busy man.
Well, you know, I've always got something to talk about. I've always got something to challenge the students to talk about, and this year will be no different. So I appreciate the chance to be here, Jolene. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, sir.
Have a good evening.
You too. That is Professor David Sturrock. And again, he's with Southwest Minnesota State University, political science professor. These are going to be trying times, that's for sure, when it comes to teaching the next generations, whether they are in elementary school, high school, or college, making sure that they understand the importance of them being active as voters. And, you know, if you have the right, if you are qualified to vote, let me tell you, do it. You know, if you are a citizen of this nation, I just pray that we can all get the word out that this is really important and it is your duty to do it. So get it done. Not just your right, but your duty as well. All right. It is now 7:52. We're going to take a break and we'll be back in a moment. It is now 7:55 here at WCCO. Welcome back. By the way, I want to let you know, with rank voting here in the great state of Minnesota, that's also a challenge. We didn't get a chance to talk about that with a professor, but you know, those are also things that we need clarity on. Some people get so confused when they go to vote. You know, do I have to have a first, second, and third choice? Can I just have a first choice? I remember someone asking me that. I was standing in line with my mom, and someone said, you know, this whole thing, do I have to have a second and third choice? So, you know, we want to make sure that Minnesotans get clarity on what it means to vote in the 2018 elections, and make sure that everyone is clear on how it works. And if you do an absentee ballot, make sure you look up where you're supposed to go. You know where you're supposed to go. Make sure that all the paperwork is in for you, that you count if you've moved. You know, all of those things need to be seen about before the election rolls around. It's going to be a big one. And I know you are discouraged. Some of you that are listening right now are very discouraged from what has happened in our 2016 election. And I don't blame you. However, the only way we can do our part to make it better is to get out and vote, to actually say, I voted. If somebody stole it, let's find out who stole it. But they can't say, I didn't vote. Because remember, your silence is a vote as well. Lots more to talk about that over the years, so I'll let it go for now. All right, coming up next, I'm excited about these two that are coming on with me tonight. Brian Few is in studio. Brian Few Jr., he is I like to call him a filmmaker. He says he's a difference maker. I can't wait to hear more about that. And also Ray Dean. You know, he's a state legislator who has gained a lot of momentum last week with his bid for Minneapolis mayor. So we're going to talk to Ray as well and find out about North Minneapolis. And, you know, you hear so much news about what's happening over in North Minneapolis. But really, do you truly know North Minneapolis? It frustrates me. When I used to live in St. Paul, you know, I would say to myself, I'd never live over North Minneapolis. And then all of a sudden, I moved to L.A., and when I came back, I moved to be closer to my mother. And let me tell you, North Minneapolis is not necessarily what you think it is. And we're going to give clarity to that tonight with my two guests, Brian Few Jr. and Ray Dean. So you don't want to miss that conversation. As well as, don't forget, at 8:35, we're going to talk about knitted knockers. Uh-huh. It's exactly what it says. I crack me up. And then, of course, at 9 o'clock, it's All Things Arts and Entertainment with all the shows we just want you to know about. And remember, if you get a chance to go and see any of those shows, make sure you contact us and let us know if we are presenting the shows and talking about the shows that you want to see. All right, you guys, take a deep breath. Enjoy this beautiful weather. Even though our head is spinning with all the political shows we hear on the weekend, just know that if you keep your head up and your ears right here to WCCO, you should receive some clarity. At least I hope I can present that every Sunday night. Stay tuned. Two Young Men coming up next.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.